Welcome to episode 2 of Access to Answers, Preparing to Unlock, a collaboration between Roshni Thacker of Goodwin and Carol Chung of Cambridge Innovation Capital, exploring hot topics and practical tips for entrepreneurs and startups in the tech and life sciences industry.
Hi Roshni, how are you?
Hi Carol, very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well. Thanks so much again for joining me for this second installment of Access to Answers podcast. I very much enjoyed our first session when we had a chance to talk about some of the practicalities of what startups should be doing with their downtime during lockdown. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be a really good idea just to have another session where we could exchange our thoughts on how companies can firstly manage their cash, mm-hmm. And secondly, to extend their runway. But more than anything, I also wanted to hear your thoughts on some of the changing funding landscape.
Yeah, of course.
Great. So can I suggest then that we kick off and work backwards, and hopefully you can help describe for me some of the funding options that are available now, and then we can segue into how companies can manage that cash.
Sure. So let's start with how companies are raising capital in the current market. So this is being done in many ways, but the most obvious at the moment are by either a convertible loan note, which is a loan that converts into shares, usually a discount, or a priced equity financing round, which is where the company issues shares in return for an investment.
Right, Roshni. And as you know, obviously, the convertible loan note option has that great advantage of generally being a quicker and cheaper way to raise funds, mm-hmm. as there's less documentation and the company can be quite flexible and bring more investors on board one at a time, as opposed to having a coordinated single close.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we alluded to in our last discussion, it also has the significant advantage that it allows that tricky discussion on valuation to be deferred until the next financing round.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Roshni, are you seeing many successful convertible loan note raises now? And what's just happening in this space now?
Well, the UK government announced the Future Fund in April, which essentially provides financing to UK startups in the form of a convertible loan. And that loan is between £125,000 and £5 million. That amount is invested directly by the government alongside private investors. It was actually a team of Goodwin lawyers that led the legal task force and advised HM Treasury on the initial design of the scheme.
Very impressive. And Roshni, are all companies eligible for this?
So there's a full list of eligibility criteria on the British Business Bank's website. But broadly speaking, the scheme's open to UK private limited companies that have raised at least 250k in equity from third-party investors in previous funding rounds, mm-hmm. and that has to have been in the last 5 years. Mm. It was recently extended so that companies that are or have been part of accelerators that require them to have a non-UK topco in place can apply for the Future Fund. Yeah. So a good example is Y Combinator, who require a company to have a US topco in order to access the accelerator. And under the first iteration of the Future Fund, they wouldn't have been eligible. Mm. And that's just one example of proof that the government are listening to the feedback that they're receiving in relation to the Future Fund and that initial scheme.
Absolutely. And it sounds like very much as though the government is broadening the catchment for the Future Fund in order to better target the startups that would actually probably most need it.
Mm, yeah. And as I mentioned, it's great that the government have actually responded to that need. So have CIC seen many Future Fund applications from their portfolio companies?
Interestingly, absolutely. Roshni, so we have been quite fortunate in that we have had 5 successful applications through the Future Fund. And for us, the overall process was very straightforward and not at all painful. So it was literally just ourselves making an application online via the government portal and just following the steps with getting very good feedback very, very quickly as well.
So super simple.
Really simple, yeah.
Great.
And so Roshni, what have you been seeing as the market response to Future Fund? And what has been the outcome of this government offering?
So as you all know, Carol, the scheme's been very well received in the market and a wide range of companies, including later stage ones, have been interested. You'll recall that the initial fund was limited to £250 million of matched funding from the government. But as of the 26th of July, the government has approved 510 loans and deployed a total of £512.9 million of matched funding. Mm. And as a result of that matched funding requirement, there's been over £1 billion invested into UK startups.
Very interesting stats, Roshni, because I'm hearing summarizing from what you're describing that means the government has really stepped up in this case and more than doubled the initial level of support for startups as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, responded to the feedback.
Gotcha. And Roshni, I know there's no crystal ball, but I mean, I think for most of our listeners, they'd be curious to hear, will there be a second wave of future fund support? And mm-hmm. what would that look like in terms of size and availability? Any hints would be super helpful for our listeners.
So we haven't seen any definitive announcement that from the government, but throughout the process, the British Business Bank have said that they'll keep the amount under review, as they have done. Mm-hmm. But as I said, no definitive announcements as of yet.
Okay, and where can our listeners find more info?
There are a number of articles that members of the Goodwin team have published, which cover FAQs and pointers on process and that kind of thing. But there's also lots of information available from the British Business Bank's website.
Right.
So, Carol, you mentioned that CIC had led 5 applications for the Future Fund. Mm. How does an investor like CIC perceive a company that is applying for the Future Fund?
Right, that's a good question, Roshni, because I think in the eyes of a VC investor, and certainly in CICs, it's a positive. Because you'll remember that a future fund application requires an investor to submit the application and mm-hmm. go through a different process. So the very fact that a VC investor is willing to do that and change their processes slightly shows strong support for a particular company. Mm-hmm. I think secondly, there's a whole aspect of financial leverage in this case where, remember, future fund is matched funding. So every £1 put in from an investor, you get an equivalent £1 back mm-hmm. from the government. So it's a nice doubling effect in terms of leveraging the money that you raise. Mm-hmm. So you can sweat your investment a little higher, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think lastly, the terms of the future fund offering are just so vanilla and straightforward and standardized. It doesn't add really any material complexity to a company's structure. So it's very easy to follow on. And so these are all check marks to a VC's eyes.
Great. Good to hear. So we've talked a lot about how companies can raise capital in the current environment. I guess what we could move on to next is how can companies make that capital last? What have you been advising your portfolio companies to do in order to effectively weather the storm?
Gotcha. And Roshni, so I'm going to stop you there and say that I almost want to change the way people think in terms about cash, conserving cash and that terminology. Mm-hmm. But instead, what I'd advise, and I do for my startups as well, is to think about how you can better use your cash, how to get essentially more bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I want people to remember that if you're a startup and if you've raised VC funding, mm-hmm. There is a cost of capital associated with that. Okay. So let's use a situation example and say that you've raised money from a VC and the VC and yourselves have agreed, you know, to look for a 10x return on this investment mm-hmm. over a 5-ish year period of time. Mm-hmm. But when you work that math backwards, essentially it kind of means that you need to be generating about a 60% growth every single year to hit that level of return, which is very substantial. Yeah. And so when you've put it in that context, I encourage people and startups to really think about, okay, well, with the money that I've raised from mm-hmm. the startups, when I'm spending it on X, Y, and Z, does that grow my business by over 60% year on year? Mm-hmm. So question yourself when you're doing that and to see if does that increase the EV of the business accordingly. So just like a point in terms of thinking about cash slightly differently.
Yeah, of course. And so kind of following on from that, what are your top tips for an effective use of capital? You've given the number of portfolio companies that you work with and in fact other companies. I imagine you've advised them on this.
Yeah, so I mean, there are some really practical ones in terms of look for ways to negotiate reduced fees with your suppliers. You can try to find ways to delay paying your accounts payable for as long as possible. So again, that holds the cash in. Mm. And then back to the previous point we described about looking at the assets that you have and like what value does it bring to your business. You could return any leased equipment that isn't being fully utilized or isn't truly value add. Mm-hmm. Look at all your software expenses with that same critical eye. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is a bit controversial, but one of my portfolio companies, that they've even gone to the point where they just canceled the office lease.
Okay.
And I fully appreciate that doesn't work for everyone else because mm-hmm. there are certain cultural nuances. But if you can make it work, that's one way in which you can certainly conserve a great deal of cash.
And what about, you know, more advanced use of digital marketing? Is that something that could be helpful?
It could be at this time, again, depending on the nature of the business and if you're at the right phase of your product development to start doing the marketing side as well. And it makes sense for a lot of businesses that, you know, will traditionally have spent a good deal of money going to on road shows, going to conferences. And instead, if you can run a digital marketing campaign that reaches your target customer for a fraction of the cost, it might be right. And it's a great suggestion. I would again, just go back to the point about bang for your buck and thinking about if I do this digital marketing campaign, what is the ROI for me as the company or the campaign runner, so that I know that I've actually, you know, targeted the right audience and they've converted it into a meaningful action. Yeah. So always, always question that if you're going to go down that route.
So ultimately, what are the key areas that investors like EIC will focus on when considering whether to invest in an early stage company? We've talked a lot about the fact that it's going to be a much tougher marketplace now, and we assume investors will only want to place secure investments.
Absolutely, Roshni. And I think that it's touching again on some of the points that we described in our last podcast, where CIC and myself, we are looking really to back exceptional teams that are using differentiated technologies in exciting market applications. So really, again, this translates back into back to backing people.
So I guess what that really means is that your management team need to know their target market and know it well.
Yeah.
Have a strategy for addressing that target market and think through who will be a competitor in that market. And by doing that, teams will be able to work out where the most lucrative opportunities lie.
I think that's absolutely right, Roisin. Once again, you've summarized it extremely succinctly. Well, Roisin, I'm afraid we're unfortunately out of time for today. And as always, it's been a pleasure catching up with you and exchanging some of your thoughts.
Likewise.
I'm hopeful that actually next podcast, if you're available, we can go on and discuss and exchange thoughts on the building relationships in this very difficult time and how to sustain these relationships in a virtual environment. So I think our listeners will be keen for that and hope you can join for the next session.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Access to Answers, Preparing to Unlock. We hope that you found this episode informative, but if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch using the information provided.